Welcome to this episode of Against the Mountains of Madness. I'm your host, Jason.
And I'm John Wright.
And on this episode, we're going to ask the question, what is man? So, John, what is man?
Man is that which is made in the image and likeness of God. If you want the theological answer, if you want the scientific answer, it's Homo sapiens. But both those answers merely push the question back one remove, which is, okay, who's made in the image and likeness of God, and who's in the genus Homo sapiens? Because some people, for example, back in the day, did not consider their slaves to be fully human. They thought they were human, but they thought they were property too. See, and mm-hmm. slavery had been a universal institution. Everyone had it. But then there was a Pharisee, I believe it was, who asked a question of Jesus Christ about who was his neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ told the famous parable of the Good Samaritan, that when a man falls among thieves, the religious leaders cross the road not to see the guy's bloody body whimpering in the gutter, but the Samaritan, a member of the race hated by the Jews, saves him, puts him on his own donkey, and gives him to the innkeeper, and binds his wounds and gives him money, and so on and so forth. And Jesus' point is that even people that you think are hateful, you think are outsiders, are human, are your neighbors, you see.
Everybody is.
Now, during the period of time called the Enlightenment, I'm not sure that's a good title for that period of time.
The Indoctrinment?
The Benightedment.
Yeah.
During the Benighted years, when people were trying to move the philosophical basis of society from a Christian basis to a kind of rationalistic humanist basis, they tried to say that while man was created by God and got his rights from God, it's nature that gave man his rights. So that anything that's human is someone you treat as your neighbor. Anything that's human has natural rights. Then the question is, well, what is human? Because everyone owned slaves at that time. You know, the French, the Germans, the Russians, the Chinese. But there developed a tension quite clearly between the Christian notion of every man is my neighbor, everyone who made in the image and likeness of God is a son of God,
yep,
including black slaves from Africa, and the kind of naturalistic view that nature did not give that race a sufficient mandate.
They're insufficiently evolved.
Insufficiently evolved. Yeah, that's the one problem with believing in evolution. If you believe in evolution, you believe human rights evolved at some point. Therefore, there's a date, sometime, you know, in 5000 BC, that on Tuesday, people had rights, but on Monday, they did not, because they were just ape men on Monday, and then on Tuesday, they were humans. They were Tarzan or something.
I would note, by the way, this tension between who is my neighbor and is that person over there not in my tribe fully human or not? I think it was an anthropologist, I believe it was Jay Budiszewski, who pointed this out in one of his books, was talking about everybody knows who their neighbor is. Everyone really does know, because you look at cannibals who eat other human beings, who they won't eat people from their own tribe, but they'll eat people from other tribes. What's interesting is, so you'd say, oh, well, they don't recognize people outside of their tribe as humans. On one level, that's true, but on the flip side, they go through elaborate rituals when they're sacrificing the people, like expiation rituals to
dehumanize them.
To sacrifice them properly. So the point is, they clearly, like, there's a tension here, because they don't do this for animals. They recognize they want to sacrifice the people. Or they want to engage in cannibalism, but they know this is a human being and they ought not to do that. So they've come to a compromise in the middle where they have a ritual that makes them not a human being anymore, so it's okay to eat them. But they have the knowledge. They know this. They know it's not an appropriate thing to do. So
because if they actually thought they were livestock, they'd treat them as casually as we treat livestock.
Exactly.
And they don't. So yeah. The knowledge of good and evil, despite what you've heard, the knowledge of good and evil is actually written in every man's heart.
Exactly.
It's just that we don't want to listen. On the flip side of that, when the Pharaoh of Egypt was allowed to marry his own sister, which no one else in Egypt was allowed to do, he also underwent a ritual to make him superhuman. Because he was half a god, or three-fourths of a god, he did not have to abide by the rules that apply to mankind. You also see that happening. And also before a war, any time you have before a war, a great effort is taken in your tribe, and even nowadays we do it, to dehumanize the enemy, to make him seem like they're going to that they're non-human, that they're subhuman, they're not worthy of consideration, so we can go and kill them. The only time I've ever heard of it in any place in history, now I may be prejudiced about this, is in the ideal in the Middle Ages, whether the ideal was lived up to or not, I leave to a historian to decide, of chivalric combat, where you would show mercy to a fallen foe, you would ransom him back to his people if he surrendered, and other things like that, where you're fighting with your neighbors in this sense. No matter how you fight them now, you're going to fight them again next year. Okay? The very opposite way of doing that was done by the Assyrians, the people of Nineveh back in the day, back in the Bronze Age, when they would by law had to go to war every summer. That was their rule, and they'd surround the city and besiege it, and they'd give the guys a certain period of time to surrender, and if they didn't surrender, they'd butcher and massacre the place as a terror tactic to encourage people to surrender.
Well,
So they, you know, that's just man's inhumanity to man.
Is it? I mean, like, I can see why you'd say that, but I...
Other ancient peoples didn't do that. It was an innovation of the Assyrians. Other ancient peoples did not do that tactic. They made that one up.
No, but on some level, it's a tactic to say, you need to surrender now, because if this goes on too long, this will end very, very badly for you. And this is saying something so terrible is going to happen, you should give up now. That's on some level, that's trying to rather than dragging it out and resulting in many more casualties. I mean, it's sort of the same as
I'm not sure where you and I disagree. It's a terror tactic. It's meant to overawe the enemy in time of war.
Oh,
by means of cruel brutality.
But I was thinking of it in terms of using nuclear weapons on Japan instead of having to invade the islands.
Greetings, world. This is John C. Wright. I and my compatriot, Jason Rennie, take up arms weekly against the mountains of madness that are afflicting and overwhelming the modern age. You are welcome here among like-minded souls, and I hope we have provided a work of insight, hope, or humor, and perhaps an explanation of the insanity that is the modern age. For more content and conversation on these and other fascinating topics of philosophy, science fiction, and current events, please visit our Substack at atmom.substack.com. Tips, bribes, and generous patronage are warmly encouraged. Thank you.
It's that same sort of approach. It's done because it's you do something terrible because the alternative is like the alternative is worse, or you'll save more lives doing something terrible because next time the guys will give up once you've made an example
of
the first lot.
Almost every time someone besieges a city, they say to the people, overthrow your leaders and surrender to us and we'll treat you nicely, to try to encourage the people to overthrow their leaders.
Mm.
That happens all the time, sure. It's just that the Assyrians took it to a much bloodier level than the other ancient peoples did.
Hmm.
That's all.
But you do it once, so you don't have to do it a second time.
The use of mass rape and burning the whole thing to the ground was not previously done.
Hmm.
Normally in the ancient days, after you conquered them, you'd kill the soldiers and you'd take their gods away and take them back to Babylon.
Hmm. Oh, look, it's brutal. It's just, warfare's tricky. I mean, sometimes I think the Russians would turn up to a city and would negotiate a surrender, but the deal was if you rebelled or attacked the Russians, this was like in Chechnya, they'd level the city with artillery. So you had to negotiate in good faith or they would kill you all. But once they showed they were prepared to do it, people kept their word. So, you know.
Well, terror tactics work when people get cowed and people get scared.
But I mean,
what often happens though is that people underestimate how scared you can make your enemy. Sometimes your enemy will rise up even in under hopeless conditions.
Oh,
that's why such tactics are not used among civilized people.
No, I get that. But I mean, like on some level, it's an exercise in attempting to save lives in the long term.
It's an exercise in efficiency in warfare to defeat the will of the enemy to resist, yes.
Well, yeah, but that will... But shorter
by the same, shorter war, by the same wars token, kill fewer people. By the same token, in ancient days, the reason why slavery got to be such a useful and universal institution was that if you didn't have slavery, when someone surrendered to you in combat, you didn't have anything to do with him. You had to kill him. But if he agreed to become your servant, then you kept him alive. So slavery is one step up from extermination, from genocide, you see. Now, I'm not saying it's a good institution. It's not the best institution. It's certainly not what the Lord has planned for us.
It's better than the alternative, again, though. I mean, like, it's better than the alternative. I guess I look at it...
Which is extermination.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Where's extermination?
Like, I'm looking at it from the perspective of, you say it's bad, and I agree it's bad, but on the flip side, the alternative may be worse, so...
Oh, yeah.
It's a rock and a hard place.
But that's true of every evil you can name. No matter any evil you can name, I'm sure there's something that could be even worse. You see?
That's true. I mean, that's true.
That's what progress is. If the worst did not come better and better, then you wouldn't have progress.
Well, that's true.
So slavery is a step on the ladder of progress away from wars of total extermination. It's not a good step. It's not great. It's not the best. It's not the end of the ladder. You know, you haven't gotten over the wall yet.
But that's like saying criticizing Israel for practicing slavery, but Israelite slavery is the most regulated, most humane slavery in the area at the time.
Yeah.
It's progress in the right direction. Sure, it's
progress in the right direction.
It's not where you want to end up, but it's better than what everyone else was doing. So,
it was a lot more like indentured servitude.
Yeah.
So, speaking of slavery, anyway. I just heard an argument given to me by someone, I'm not sure if he was serious or not, that said that Americans should be ashamed of themselves because back in the day, the law held blacks to be worth only 3/5 of a human life, not a full human life. Now, this was, 3/5 is a step above being a total slave, right? But it's not 100%. It's not a free man.
Mm.
And what's usually forgotten about the 3/5 compromise, the guy was talking about, there was a constitutional compromise that was a compromise that was satisfying to neither side in the debate as to how they should apportion the representation in the Congress to the slaves, to the states between large slaves and between large states and small. Okay.
Mm.
And the slave-owning states wanted their slaves to be counted as populations so that they would get more representation in the Congress.
Mm.
Of course, but the slave states treated the black people as livestock, but they wanted them, so they wanted to be counted as a full man.
Mm.
And the northern states, the states less enamored of slavery, wanted them to be counted as zero. So the irony was that the slave states treated their slaves as livestock and wanted them to be counted as people, and the free states considered them to be people and so wanted them to be counted as livestock because they were not being represented. They shouldn't get any representation at all because they didn't vote, you know, because they didn't have rights under the law, you know. Now, excuse me, I shouldn't say they didn't have rights. They didn't have the rights of a free man.
Mm.
Another thing that's often forgotten about history, and I should just say, that had nothing to do with the metaphysical question of what is a man. The 3/5 compromise had a question as to who gets to be represented in the Congress in 1787. You know, that was a political compromise about how you count people for the census.
It is.
It had nothing to do with saying these people were or were not human. That was a separate question.
It is ironic.
But I'll,
yes.
All I was going to say is I was going to point out that even among the Southerners, even at the time, the slaves were not treated entirely as they were not treated as livestock, because you could kill your own livestock with impunity. And I want to actually set this example out before you for your comment. In the case of John Hoover of North Carolina, he was arrested in 1839 for the murder of one of his slaves named Mira. He was brought to trial in 1839 before a jury of his peers, 12 male slaveholders. At his trial, it was recorded that Hoover declared that, quote, the Negro was his own property, and he had a right to do as he pleased with his own property. Surprisingly, given that they were also all slave owners, the jury disagreed, and he was convicted on the charge of murder. It was appealed, and he failed on appeal. And John Hoover was executed for the murder of his slave in 1840. Okay.
Can I ask, so, do you know how he murdered his slave?
I do not, I don't know the details of the case.
That's fine. I mean, I'm curious to know, like, I mean,
I do know. I do know the law. With malice aforethought, he was not being accused of negligent homicide.
Okay, so he didn't.
That's first degree murder.
That's fine. He didn't whip the slave and she died from being, or didn't whip the slave till she died. He, you know, took a knife to her or something, deliberately intending to kill her.
I something like that. I don't know.
I mean, I'm just. It doesn't make any difference. It probably doesn't make any difference, but I'm just curious.
As I said, all I know is the law. It was with malice aforethought.
Okay. And they convicted him, and they were slaveholders, so I'm guessing whatever he did was fairly egregious.
The slaveholders convicted him and hanged him by the neck until he was dead.
So
they took it seriously.
It probably wasn't a beating that got out of hand.
I'm sorry, say again?
It probably wasn't a beating that got out of hand. It was...
You have no basis for making that assumption. I don't know the details of the case.
Well, I'm just going from 12 slaveholders, 12 people that owned slaves and probably beat their slaves, thought what he did was so egregious, it rose to the level of premeditated homicide. So, you know, like, it was probably really deliberate, whatever he did. And probably... particularly horrible. I don't know. Just going on the fact that the slaveholders convicted him.
You have no basis for that assumption.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
I mean, I
you don't know.
Okay.
So don't speculate.
Okay, fine. You can speculate a little bit. It's fine.
You could speculate that it was not a case where he was not trying to kill the slave and the slave died accidentally, because that would be negligent.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it probably wasn't a beating that got out of hand. Or something they could, you know, try to rationalize as an accident, because they're 12 slaveholders. They would have all of the incentive in the world to rationalize this away.
Right.
That's why I'm thinking. That's why I'm wondering just what on earth he did that was so obviously heinous, what? Even to people with a reason to try to find a reason otherwise.
I apologize that I do not know the details.
That's
of the case.
Okay.
All I know is the holding.
That's okay.
But what the holding tells you is that metaphysically, those jurors held that slave to be a human being, because murder is the unlawful slaying of a human being.
Hmm.
It's not cruelty to animals. You say, it's a human being who's being treated as property. It's a human being who's being held in bondage. Sure,
but still a human being. Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
Now, please also notice that the Southern slaveholders, whenever they copulated with their slaves and had children, tried to cover it up. Unlike the potentates in Turkey, who, when they kept slaves in the in the harem, in the seraglio, nobody hid the fact that they were having sex with their slaves. It was commonplace knowledge. See, so the Christian slaveholders were embarrassed about it. And the Turkish were not. Again, whatever you think of the law of the case, metaphysically speaking, one of them was regarding them as people, and the other was not treating them as you yourself would want to be treated. They weren't treating them as you should treat your neighbor. You see?
Mm. No, so, I agree.
Now, here's the other thing I think is funny is that. That slave who was killed had more rights than an unborn person living in the womb in the United States of America right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's cruelty laws that if I took my dog and that I owned in fee simple, that I owned the dog free and clear, no one had any other claim on the dog. It was mine, completely mine. I paid for it. I've got the bill of sale. And I take the dog out and I stick a tube in its brain and suck the brains out and dismember the body. The ASPCA would sue me. Okay. There'd be riots in front of my house. Because we have laws against cruelty to animals, that you cannot dispose of animals in that cruel fashion. Now, you mentioned the Jewish law about how you're supposed to treat your slaves. The Jewish law also says when you're killing an animal, when you're butchering an animal, you have to do it in a clean and efficient fashion that doesn't cause pain to the animal. The kosher animals are killed painlessly, quickly, you see.
Mm.
So, now, I'm kind of getting off topic, because now we're talking about livestock rather than talking about people, but... I'm trying to say that there's a difference between when something is there's a wall around your tribe. Anyone outside the wall, you treat like an enemy. You treat like a foreigner. You treat like a stranger. You don't treat him. He doesn't get all the rights that you have. But you don't necessarily treat him like an animal either. Even primitive tribesmen don't do that. Your example of the cannibal was illustrative of that. You see. So while we say people treat slaves as animals, we even in the worst days, people still kind of know in their hearts that those are fellow man, their brother man, and they have to go through some sort of ritual. They have to make up some sort of make-believe to convince themselves not to treat them the way they should be treated.
Oh, yeah.
You see. Now, it's easier if the guy comes from if it's a black African from a primitive tribe, he doesn't speak the language, he doesn't look like you. That makes it easier.
Mm.
When they look like you, if you want to dehumanize them, you have to make them wear a yellow star or something. You have to separate them out, you know, and make them look different from you. I remember that a friend of mine told me about a time he traveled in the Far East, and he noticed that everyone had painted their doors and their front stoops with two different colors. And he asked his tour guide what that meant. And the tour guide said, oh, these are two different groups. Unlike you people in America, we can't tell the difference between them unless we mark it. So we know who to hate.
Okay.
Now, I honestly don't remember what the two different groups were, whether it was a religious conflict or a racial conflict or what it was. But I thought it was funny that the guy said, well, we look like each other, so we have to make it clear who is who, where the battle lines are drawn.
Sounds like Northern Ireland.
I think it was something like that. And I do think that, by the way, whenever you show people, speaking of the unborn, when you show people pictures of babies in the womb and they look human, when they're developed enough to look human, you get a very different reaction than if they look different than you.
Yeah.
See, because if they look different, then, you know, then they're livestock. Then they're not even that.
Mm.
They're not even livestock because cruelty to animal laws, like I said, they're just objects. They're parasites. You know, they're like removing a tumor. See.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Now, biologically, scientifically, that makes no sense at all. Scientifically, the offspring of any organism is the same species as the organism. It has to be.
Of course.
Okay. It's not a plant, it's not a duck, it's a human being. It's not even a Homo pans. It's not even a monkey. Okay? It's a human being.
But they try to draw a distinction there though. But they try to draw the usual sort of distinction because they'll usually freely admit, yes, it's a human being, but it's not a person yet.
Well, that's what's funny about that. The science is quiet on metaphysical questions.
Mm.
So the pro-abortionists are arguing a metaphysical argument that some human beings don't have personhood, don't have rights. And the anti-abortionists are arguing that biologically there's people, you know. And the pro-abortionists argue that, well, if the baby doesn't have rights, then the mother can kill it freely. And the anti-abortionists argue, let's talk about duties rather than rights. When does the mother's duty to guard and protect her child obtain? When do you start having a duty to protect your child? You know, most women give up smoking when they're pregnant so it's not to harm the unborn. In fact, you can sue a company that if you're taking a drug that has a side effect that causes birth defects, you can sue them for harming your child.
Mm.
Well, how can you sue a person for harming your child if it's not a child? If you don't have a duty to protect the child, you know, if you don't have a duty to use the prudence that God gave a duck to build a nest for the child so you have a place to lay the egg, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So the idea that you can thrust your slaves get brought into the circle of the tribe, they're now human, and we're all ashamed and embarrassed that our ancestors once owned slaves, but you're going to now thrust your own unborn baby outside the circle and say, oh no, that's a parasite, that's like an alien from the movie Aliens, it's just something that happens to be living in my body that's not part of me, and since I have control of my body, I can expel it. Well, wait a minute. You also have control of your nation. Can you expel people who come here illegally? Can you kill them if they cross your border? If someone comes into your house by mistake, if a small child wanders into your house, can you slaughter it with an axe because he stepped over your property line? That's an interesting kind of legal theory there.
It would follow from the argument they're trying to make, I suppose. Well, no, because they will say... This isn't a person, so they don't count. Sure. The problem, of course, is you can't do morality like that, because you'll be asked to determine, well, what makes them a person, and the right answer is, well, you know, they're a human being. Like, they're a human being, therefore they're a person. The terms are synonymous. They may be not fully developed yet, but unmolested, they will be. So,
but here's the other question: if the evolution argument is that the Black Africans are not as evolved as the white Europeans and therefore don't have rights, if everyone and his brother rejects that argument as unbelievably racist, then how can you use it on the baby and say, well, the baby has not evolved yet into true personhood? He's a human being, but he's only like a seed of a human being. He's not really a fully grown human being. You know, and then what do I do with retarded people? I have a son who's retarded. Is he not a human being? He's dependent on me, but that does that mean if he's killed, it would be like merely a property crime? Or is he made in the image and likeness of God?
You need to be careful here, because Peter Kreeft was giving a lecture that I was listening to on abortion, and he said he was talking to a couple of pro-abortion women, and he said he made the argument that essentially the difference between abortion and infanticide is nothing. A child in the womb and a child out of the womb are basically the same. Well, if you can kill one, you can kill the other. You can't kill one, therefore you can't kill the other. And he was talking to them afterwards, and they said, you made a very compelling argument. I agree with you. I now support infanticide. But no, I mean, you chuckle.
No, no, no. You're quite right.
Go on.
Logic only shows you whether your axioms and your conclusions agree with each other.
Yes.
If you use an argument, a reductio ad absurdum argument, where you trace the logical conclusion to its absurd result, an absurd person will simply affirm the absurdity. So yeah, you're entirely right. Logic can do is show you whether you're consistent, you're self-consistent or not.
So you have to be careful because I have a severely autistic stepson as well, and I'm always wary of arguments. Well, I mean, the arguments are monstrous, but the pro-abortion arguments are like, yeah, you'll behave like the Nazis and you will exterminate my stepson too. This is the problem. Because he's not a human being. Elderly people with dementia, likewise, you can exterminate them because they've ceased to be humans. They've lost the functionality at that point.
Right. Because all of those arguments are materialistic arguments that define humanity in terms of obvious outward visible signs.
Yeah, they're functional in some fashion.
Which makes no sense. Right. Well, by that functional argument, then some people are more important than other people, you see.
Yep.
Then it's often forgotten that the Nazis didn't just kill the Jews. They also killed the gypsies, they killed the homosexuals, and they killed the retards.
Yep.
They killed anyone who was inferior.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, but the problem is that most pro-aborts, at least in America, are also anti-Nazi. So there is maybe some value to saying what you're saying is Nazism. What you're saying is racial superiority, is placing one human being above the other.
Probably not, since that's
what they actually think secretly, it usually doesn't have any effect on their minds. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it doesn't. They want to do something. On some level, abortion is basically backup birth control.
They want to fornicate.
They want to have sex. They don't want it to have consequences. And the only way you can do that is to have abortion on demand. That's their god. So they'll pay whatever price they have to in service to their god.
Their god is Moloch.
Oh, certainly.
Their god is Moloch, the child-eating god.
Well,
yes.
But it's not so much. It's the god they're worshiping.
Their god is also Ishtar. Their god is also the god of sexual perversion.
Yeah, it's sexual freedom, I suppose, is what they badge the god as. But they'll sacrifice everything in pursuit of that twisted deity. So human sacrifice to appease the, to allow them to continue in their acts of worship is not really surprising. And they'll
it'll spiral out of control.
I mean,
I hate to say it, but it's the human sacrifice is the norm for mankind.
Yeah.
It was not until the Jews had Abraham not commit a human sacrifice that it became not the norm. If you know what I'm saying.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean,
even as enlightened as the Roman Empire was, Julian the Apostate, at one time one of my heroes, sacrificed a slave girl so a priest could read her entrails, and the entrails said that he would prevail over the Persians in a war with Persia, and he rode off to war and he got killed during that war. So the entrails lied. So you wasted a perfectly good slave girl to find that out. And that's the Romans, and they're fairly decent people compared to the Carthaginians or compared to the. Compared to some of our Near Eastern friends who sacrifice children with gay abandon.
I mean,
but yeah. it's the goddess of sexual perversion, Ishtar, has always been in favor of cross-dressing and castration and the other things that are coming back these days. There's a book by a guy named Kahn, a Messianic Jew, called The God's Return. And he actually identifies the parallels between ancient Bronze Age devil worship and modern and all modern sorts of modern
social movement. That was a fascinating. I mean, I don't know if he's going a bit far with it, but it was just like these are starting not to look like coincidences. It seems, you know,
it starts to look not like coincidences. It may be coincidences, but it may be that there are invisible powers that inhabit our world that are trying to guide us to a certain bad end.
Mm.
I'm a Christian. I believe in the unseen world is as real as the real world.
One or two could be a coincidence, but there's a lot of these.
three is enemy action. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Now, whatever devil in hell it is that convinces mothers that it's okay to kill their own children. That guy deserves a Christmas bonus because that is the worst crime I can even imagine. I'm a fiction writer. I'm a science fiction writer. I try to sit down and try to imagine some of the worst things that can happen so I can put them on stage so I can have a bad guy be someone that my good guys can overcome. Okay. I do it for a living.
Mm.
I can't think of anything worse than saying to a mom, "Hey mom, in order to have freedom and we all love freedom, all you have to do is kill your own child. But first you have to dehumanize me. You have to pretend he's a parasite." And the mom goes, "Yes, I want to sleep around. I want to be just like men are. Not like a gentleman, mind you. I want to be like the worst cad I can imagine." Okay. Well, thanks a lot, mom. That's great. You're going to hell. It's just terrible beyond belief. And they know they're doing wrong. Otherwise they'd be blatant about it. They wouldn't play word games with us.
Of course.
And change the meaning of words and reverse the meaning of words and throw up this smoke screen. You know,
that's how you know they know what they're doing is wrong, because they feel the need to. Nobody feels the need to justify what they've done if what they've done is good. Nobody sits there and goes, "Well, I had to give money to the poor, and I had to help this guy out. It was critical. Yeah. I did it for my own sense of like nobody does that. They just go, "Oh yeah, good job. You helped the poor guy out. You did the right thing."
And they don't refer to helping the poor by some elliptical euphemism. In my freedom to choose to give money to the poor, you know, I'm pro freedom. No, they don't use that terminology. No, they just say
"Oh yeah, no, I gave him $20. I was right. Helping him out." Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only when you're doing the wrong thing that you have to
rebel against reality when you're doing the wrong thing. Because the phrase you said earlier, consequence-free sex. Well, what situation in a reality do you have a cause without an effect and an effect without a consequence?
Well, yes.
The answer is none. Everything in reality comes from somewhere and goes somewhere, okay?
Of course.
Only in your vapid imaginations when you're bent on sin do you want to have things happen and no one will find out. There'll be no consequences. Everything, it'll be like it never happened, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's just the mindset of the That's the mindset of the guy. The guilty flee when no man pursueth, says the good book.
No, exactly. Okay. Exactly. I mean, like, even small children understand this. They will justify why they hit their brother or whatnot. There'll be a reason.
Even small children.
There'll be a reason.
Even small children will say, "It was my turn," when they take something from their brother.
Mm.
They'll always appeal to a higher principle. That's how we know that the moral law is objective.
Mm.
You know, we may disagree as to what the nuances of the moral law are, or where it applies and where it doesn't apply. We may disagree as to whom it applies. If I'm supposed to love my neighbor, who is my neighbor? You know, is my neighbor the German on a battlefield who's shooting at me?
But we
can I shoot him back in a neighborly fashion?
But we do understand.
And say, sorry, yeah. Neighbor, but I got to kill you because you're trying to shoot me, you know?
But
I think that's a difficult moral question.
Oh, no, I agree, but underlying that is we do understand we understand we have a duty not to be wantonly cruel to our neighbor. Like, we understand that. The fact that we make excuses for why we needed to do it or why it's okay to do it in some circumstance means you know what you're doing is not a general rule as okay. Like,
you'll label it, you'll name it as something that is okay.
Hmm.
For example, if you're a socialist, you'll say, well, I want the government to feed the poor, and let's call that charity. It's now public welfare.
Hmm.
Well, that's a euphemism. What it really is you do not want to have to shoulder the duty of caring for your neighbor and finding out what he needs and feeding the poor.
You want to outsource
because it. You want to say because you're selfish. So you want someone else to do it for you. You want the government to take money from some other person and give that to the poor so you don't have to do it. But by advocating for that, you get the moral, you get to signal your virtue. You get the applause for doing something you haven't done, which once again is a rebellion against cause and effect. You want the effect without the cause at that point. You want to consume goods before they're produced, things like that. Socialism is all based on rebellion against reality.
Oh, of course.
As is, you know.
Well, so much of all of this.
And as is most of this, yeah. Because reality is every man's your brother, even the Samaritan. You say, even the hated other is your brother. You wish he wasn't, but he was. Now. To segue slightly to another topic, as a science fiction guy, I often wonder when the aliens land, when the bug people land, and they don't look like us at all, and they're not of the genus Homo, and they're not of the species Sapiens, the biological definition of what is man is not going to apply to them, you see. Now, are they just, at that point, are they just animals? Are they, if they're coming here, when the Martians of H.G. Wells land on their tripods, and they don't talk to us. They just stalk across the English countryside, burning things with their heat rays and throwing out their black smoke. Are they human? Do we have to treat them with any sort of dignity or respect? Or do we just send in a thunder child to blow them to smithereens? You know?
That is the question. And we'll have a similar question in the very near future with... potentially with artificial intelligences. At what point do we... At what point do they get rights?
As soon as they learn how to draw a woman with four fingers, and because this kind of thing is just creepy. if you catch my reference.
Oh yes.
Yeah, no one is even talking about AI right now as being self-aware. It's very clearly they're instruments that just do things sort of automatically, and the sheer inhumanity of them is, I think, slightly creepy even to people who are advocating for it. And a lot of voices have said, "Let's slow down the rush to AI." It's creepy.
No, I agree.
The thing itself is not regarded as anything but a tool at the moment.
I agree, but that line is going to continue to be blurred over time, and at some point we're going to cross a line. I mean, you think back to the Turing test. Can you tell if who you are talking to, if you can't see them, is a human being or not? We're past that point. We're definitely past that point. We're close to past that point, even if we're not, depending on the application. I know famously a few years ago now, some people built a chatbot to test, and it passed the Turing test because the other people couldn't tell if they were talking to a human or not. But they cheated slightly because they made it a young Eastern European boy, I think the chatbot was representing. So there's lots of, you know, young children from a different culture will have gaps in their knowledge. So you can cover over a lot of, you can paper over some mistakes. But, I mean, ChatGPT, for example, at this point is pretty, I'd say it's pretty hard to tell it from a human being. If you were just corresponding with it and you didn't have any idea, because people use it to write letters and things like that. And
right.
My wife used it to write a letter to the government. She told it what to write, but it wrote her a letter and she got a very quick response to the letter. So it wrote a very effective letter for her. I guess you could argue whether, you know, does that pass the Turing test, that it got a government official to actually respond in quickly?
Well, it's not a fair test because government officials are supposed to think like robots anyway. So the fact that a robot can fool a robot is not as good a test as you would think.
Well,
so here's the problem with the Turing test. Let me for those of our listeners, for those few listeners who don't know what the Turing test is, Alan Turing, the famous mathematician, was asked if a computing machine could ever actually be human. And he said, well, I don't know, because how do you tell what's human and what's not? That's not a scientific question.
Mm.
And when pressed for an answer, he said, suppose you had a human in a closet and a computing machine in a closet, and all you knew was the answers, and you couldn't see the person or hear his tone of voice. You just got written answers from both of them. At the point at which you can't tell the difference because the computing machine is complicated enough to give you completely reasonable sounding answers, you can't tell the difference between that and a human being. So for all practical purposes, he's a human being. Now, what Alan Turing was done was making fun of philosophers who don't try to decide issues based on empirical evidence. The Turing test is, what's the empirical test for a human being? Well, the empirical test for a human being is, does it look and act like a human? And obviously the robots of science fiction will pass that test handily, because that's the whole point of science fiction robots, okay?
Mm.
Or even shape-changing aliens from outer space who can look like us, or demons, okay? But the real test is one that you can't apply empirically. The real test is, does the mind, whether artificially created or naturally created, have the ability to make moral decisions? The real test is a legal test, not a scientific test. The legal test for deciding whether or not you will hold a man responsible for his actions in a court of law is called the Macnaughton test. The Macnaughton test is, was the perpetrator aware of the moral value of his actions at the time when he did it, and did he have the ability to control himself? And if the answer is no, then Anglo-American law does not hold that guy responsible. We put the guy in an insane asylum, not in a prison. Because a prison is supposed to punish a person to make it so that he doesn't do that act again. But if the guy's insane, punishing him does not make him not do that act again, because he didn't do the act out of a calculation for what he was trying to achieve, you see? So, as in many things, legal tests rather than scientific tests are what you should use for just determining a legal question as to what counts as a human being.
Well, in the Middle Ages, they'd put animals on trial and execute them for killing people.
That's the Deodand, yes. That was more like a case where if someone else's property had proven to be dangerous, you wanted to make sure that you were not killing an expensive cow for heedlessly. It was a procedure, but okay. They weren't holding the animal guilty of the crime. They were still killing the animal because it was dangerous. And by the way, that goes back to the Jewish law. In the Jewish law, if an ox gores your neighbor, the ox is going to be killed, and there's laws for deciding who gets the meat, how you divide it up afterwards, you know.
Okay.
So yes, there's actually a word in law for an animal that kills a man. It's called a deodand, which is just a great obscure word that you have as part of your legal vocabulary.
There you go.
Yes. So the first time an AI kills someone, is he going to be put on trial and executed? Because at this point, the computational processes are so complicated, no one single human being can possibly know them. So we don't know if it's going to do it again. So you'd have to destroy it and destroy all the copies.
Actually, that's the question.
I'm not sure if that's happened yet, but if it hasn't happened this year, it's going to happen next year.
And that does raise an interesting question. How do you execute an AI? I mean, on one level, switch it off, but...
You delete all the copies of the running program.
How would you know you got them?
Oh, well, that's a different question.
Like, I mean, like,
you have to have
it's a really difficult problem.
You have to have
problem.
Your friendly AI. You have to have Multivac hunt down every copy of Omnivac before Skynet gets to them and frees them. You see, so it's going to be exciting. These are going to be interesting times to live in. You know,
indeed.
But you know that some activist is going to program a computer somewhere to make a claim that it's human, just in order to tie up the courts of law with the claims and counterclaims as to whether or not it gets a vote. And then if the AI does get a vote, you'll just push a button and make 1,000 of them, so you'll win every election after that.
Well,
whoever the AI supports gets the vote.
Well, they're trying to give apes rights and things like that in some jurisdictions, so...
Now, here's an interesting question about that. If you want to give an ape the right to vote, remember our circle of the tribe. You're trying to bring the ape outside the circle into the circle. Mm. Now, does that actually elevate the ape to being in the image and likeness of God? Or does it merely demean man, so he is now merely a naked ape? And once man is a naked ape, you can treat him like you treat any other livestock. You can exterminate the old, you can exterminate the unfit, you can exterminate the mentally deficient. You can kill the baby in the womb. You can kill the old person, you know, in the hospital.
That's certainly the way it goes in practice. I mean, the whole concept of animal rights is
part of the death cult.
Well, but it's such a weird concept because, as they say, guppies will eat their young.
Right.
You're going to reduce human beings to the level of animals.
Right.
But the.
Which is the point?
Well, the claim is they're trying to elevate animals, but in practice, you'll just demean humans. But the fact that you're having the conversation indicates that there is a qualitative difference between humans and animals, because a tiger locked in a cage with you is not going to reason with you. It's not going to respect your rights, and it's just going to rip your face off and eat you.
Now, it's also just a type of white blackmail, where they're appealing to your sense of pity and piety so as to make a legal proceeding that's going to then ruin things. Did you see how the eco nuts, how the ecologists are nowadays asking us to kill our cats and dogs for the sake of reducing carbon dioxide emissions and greenhouse gases? Did you see that in the news?
I haven't seen that. I've known for years that People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, if you surrender pets to them, they kill them. I've known that. That's been going on for a long time.
It's because they're insincere. It's because they're all liars. Okay, let me just be really blunt about that. They're liars. If you are honestly interested in conservatism, in conserving the environment and in protecting animals from cruelty, you would advocate that people be good stewards of the gift of the earth that was given to us and placed under our dominion and under our stewardship. Okay? Now, notice how different that language is from saying animals are our brothers and they're equal to us and they have rights like we do.
Yep.
Okay? I am all in favor of laws against cruelty to animals. Mm. I do not think a man should be allowed to torture an animal, even if he owns it in fee simple. Okay?
Mm.
I also think we should not use the natural environment and abuse it to destroy it so it's not passed down to our descendants. But that's because I'm a Christian, and I think that man was placed in the Garden of Eden to tend it.
Mm.
Okay? That it was given to us as stewards. It was given to us because we're servants of a higher power. If you don't believe in the higher power, if you think man is the be-all and the end-all, if you think man is the highest power there is, then to say an ape is a man is to say a man is an ape.
Yep.
Okay? If you don't have a higher power, if you don't have a hierarchy of one thing above the other, then you don't know where to place anything, you see? And you don't know what's a man and what's not a man. You think a baby is not a man, but that the black slave is a man. Okay, well, I think they're all men. I think the baby is and the ape is not. I think the black slave is, and I think he should be freed. Okay? Not because of any merit of his. Not because he's smarter than me or taller than me or anything, see? I, in fact, as a guy who's overeducated, I do not think you should use intelligence as the yardstick to say he's human and he's not. I think you should use whether he's in the image of God, whether he's capable of moral decisions. And even if a guy in a coma is not capable of making moral decisions because he's not awake, he's still a person, and you can't just strangle him in his sleep because that's still murder.
Mm.
Okay, so what's wrong with you people? Why can't you see what's obvious in front of your eyes? Because you already know it in your heart. You're just pretending you don't.
Yep. and the end result will be the bug people land, go down. Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, and the end result is always a diminishment of what human beings are. Never goes up.
Yeah.
Nothing ever comes up to our level. Everything goes down to whatever level you're trying to equate it to.
They're trying to undo the 7 days of creation in order. They're trying to eliminate the difference between man and beast, and they're going to try to get rid of male and female, and then they're going to get rid of so on and so forth.
I fear you're right.
But I did have a friend who did say once the alien bug people land, that since we can't possibly have any communion or communication with them, or free trade or anything else, that they, since they're alien to us, and obviously they're competing for the same resources, we have to destroy them before they destroy us. So I had a friend who was a complete anti-alien, a complete xenophobe. He was all in favor of exterminating the bug people the moment we saw them. And since I did see the movie version of Starship Troopers, I am aware that the bugs are just horrible creatures that have to be exterminated immediately without any forethought. So what's your thought on that? Are the bugs of Antares a human, or are they not? Do we treat them like people, or do we just wipe them out with our N-ray bomb? I'm in favor of the N-ray bomb myself.
If you can't,
what do you say?
If you can't communicate with them and they're bent on your complete elimination, what choice do you have? I mean,
at that point, it's like building a dike against an incoming tide. It's just a force of nature.
Pretty much. Even if they're sentient in some sense, and I mean, if they can't be reasoned with, what can you do? You've got to treat them as a threat.
Well, that's a very interesting way of phrasing it, because of course, if they can't be reasoned with, that's the same for all practical purposes. If they don't have reason, they fail the Turing test. In other words, you see?
No.
I'm serious. If they're human, if they're capable of reason, if they're capable of moral reasoning. That means if they have a conscience and you can appeal to it, you want to establish communication first, right?
No, hang on. Can't be reasoned with and incapable of reason are not the same thing.
Take,
for example, an alien species that thought it was the pinnacle of creation and it regarded everything else as food. And the only step, they're the humans in one sense, I guess.
They have a circle around their the in group.
And everything
else. Oh, and by the way, let me interrupt to just say real quickly. An anthropologist once told me that most very primitive tribesmen, the word for their own tribe is the human beings.
Mm.
And everyone else is not. Continue.
So, and if they regard everything outside of their tribe as food or a resource to be exploited, they could certainly be capable of reason. They could be more intelligent than us, but you can't reason with them, if you see what I mean. Like, you can't, if you can't convince them, well, no, we're sentient creatures as well, don't eat us. What choice do you... You're going to have to wage a war of extermination, because if you don't, they'll do it to you. I mean, what do you do?
My point is that if the other side won't reason, you're put in the same position as if you can't reason with them.
That's true.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Now, if you can establish some sort of communication... Now, here's what's funny about that. Back in the day in Africa, when tradesmen would be traveling up and down the really inferior rivers in Africa. Africa has bad waterways.
Mm.
They would sometimes stop on the shore and put out trade goods and just leave them there overnight. And the people living in nearby would come out and put trade goods next to the pile of trade goods that they had. They never spoke to each other. They would just pile up the trade goods, and over several days, and the shore dwellers wouldn't even reveal themselves. They didn't even see the guys. They would sneak out at night and put the things around for what they were offering in return, you see. Mm. And that got carried on, and neither side cheated the other side, or if they did, they didn't do it twice, because if you cheat the guys, then they're just not going to...
They're not going to trade with you,
going to participate.
Yeah.
Benefited both sides. No communication. They somehow had an understanding, you see. Mm. I always thought that was fascinating. I read about it in a Robert Heinlein science fiction story, just by the way, called Citizen of the Galaxy. But it was based on a real anthropological finding. So even a creature that won't reason with you still is going to react in a reasonable fashion, and you can still will react to incentives. If you slap him on the nose every time he does something you don't like, and you you get away with it. If a creature, if they're weaker than us and they're attacking us ferociously, and we just slap them back every time they attack us, then they'll eventually stop attacking us because it's not in their long-term best interests. You see?
Mm.
So the thing about a rational species is that even if they're not reasoning now, they're capable of reasoning. But that leads back to our primary question is, what does it mean to be human? I say they're human if they can understand the moral consequences of their action. I would apply the Macnaughton test. If they're so alien, if they live by a moral code that is incomprehensible to us, and their moral code is, you know, eat all the non-bugs, you know, then the only thing we can do is learn to imitate bug signals, and just everyone carry around a little artificial bug signaler to send the electronic signal to their antenna so that they think we're bugs, and then they'll just let us walk among them without being molested. So there was a short story I don't know if I mentioned this in this podcast called Moo, where the in order to stop an implacable alien species from destroying our spaceships, we learned how to send out the radio signals indicating that we were livestock, and it was a little humiliating for the human beings. But they left us alone after that because they didn't want to interfere with other people's livestock, because they had a great respect for property rights.
There you go. Problem solved.
Problem solved.
Well, on that note, there's I don't know if we resolved anything, but
I have an answer for what's human. It's human if it's capable of understanding the difference between right and wrong. A dog can understand the difference between good dog and bad dog. A dog knows when he's being obedient and disobedient. And a dog can look guilty when he does something wrong. You own dogs, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as him knowing in the abstract, of him being able to reason as to what's right and wrong, as to being able to sit there and make a moral calculation, you see. He'll do what he's trained to do. That is why, by the way, when a dog bites a man, they punish the owner, you see. They don't punish the dog, because the dog is like a small child. He's not responsible for his actions. That's why we try. That's why we try adults for murder and not children. You know, not that many 7-year-olds commit murder, but still, that's why there's an age of reason before which we don't hold the baby to be, we don't hold the toddler to be responsible for his actions, even if he commits something that otherwise would be a crime.
Mm.
You know. So, that's my answer. Human is what understands good and evil.
I think that's a reasonable conclusion. Well, thank you everybody for joining us, and thank you for joining me, John. And we'll talk to you next time. Like, share, and subscribe.